about the same that I was about to give to the school, shall they not hear the whole truth and nothing but the truth?
Afternoon. Can you please confirm your full name for the court? And you prepared a brief of evidence dated 28th of July 2023? And you confirm that that evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and ability? How many subcatchments within the Waikato PC1 region do you operate in? Great. Thank you. Can you please stay to answer any questions for my friends at the court?
I think you did.
Mr. Miles? Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Jivan, how many hectares across those three subcatchments?
About 250.
And what's the rough division of that 250 among the three? Just roughly.
About 50 hectares in one, another 30 in another, and about in the other, in the third.
So that's about 100. And when you rotate your crops, you look at that 250 overall and plan and schedule your rotations?
We do, yes. We treat it as one total.
One total, that's right. And is your operation stable at 250, or have you gone up or gone down on any stage over the past years?
We've increased as the land became available.
Okay, you've been generally increasing. Do you
generally, and you know, to improve our rotation.
Right.
It's difficult to actually just go and grow a whole lot more vegetables and try and sell them. So when land has become available, purchased it with a mind to actually improve our rotation.
Right. And the land you acquired, was that land already used for cropping, or have you had to bring it into crops?
It was existing.
Existing. Right. Thank you. Anything arising? Thank you very much for your evidence.
I now call Brendan Ball. Can you please confirm your full name for the court?
Brendan Rory, here in Ball.
And you prepared a brief of evidence dated the 28th of July 2023?
That's correct.
And you confirm that that evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and ability?
Just one, correction. One correction, sorry, page 11. Page 11 under under approach, there's just one typo there on should we go proper. Thank you.
Aside from that one correction, your evidence is true and correct?
Correct.
Thank you. You would have heard Mr. Jackie Williams's questions around Te Rōpū Mahia Te Mahi. Do you have anything, any comments to add around that discussion?
What I would say is that we found, as the south in our fellow vegetable growers, we have found working with Mana Whenua particularly rewarding. From quite early in the piece, across several hui, we discussed our concerns and our challenges, and from all sides and all angles, and we found common threads, particularly around water quality and improved environmental health. So that are some of the common threads that, that we've discussed at length across hui. Some of them, as Mr. Nathan talked about, supporting meeting monthly, sometimes even weekly, to discuss these matters and also to discuss projects that may help improve and get better outcomes.
Councillor, I just wondered, is the current matter that Mr. Macon discussed the same document or the text which is in your document that Mr. Wall said, that's been taken out of the document and placed into your evidence? Is that how it's worked?
Correct. So in my evidence, that's pretty much a cut and paste of what we have discussed.
There's nothing else from the document itself that has been omitted. I'm always a bit cautious when the document itself is not attached to the text that's been taken out and put into a document.
I do apologise for that. Since the what I've got in my text is actually from earlier in the process, and because it is, we are working on projects and even since July, since that was written, there has been a lot more work done, but not around the vision and the deliverables. All of those things stand as part of our founding document.
Okay. What I'm trying to clarify is whether there's another document which adds text to what you've got in here, or everything is the same.
To my knowledge, everything is the same.
Okay. I have some other questions for you for later, but thank you.
And I would also just like to ask you how many hectares and you operate and within how many sub-catchments in the Waipiro area?
Off the top of my head, I couldn't give you the hectares. Reasonably complex business. Off the top of my head, there could be 22, 24 farms across 8 sub-catchments. I've been involved with Plan Change 1 since the 2005 in 2016, and was keeping an eye on, we were aware of it being developed prior to 2016. So we're probably just sort of quite concerned about some of the outcomes and some as the process has gone through, feeling we consider the land that we farm on and we rotate across the EBU as being far more practical and workable than considering that the sub-catchment level. But I will qualify that by saying that generally the areas within those sub-catchments are static, that those areas don't really change. And if they do change, it would only be if we were, it's all farmed as vegetable production. And if we're going into a rotation of, say, grass or arable, such as barley or other arable crops, to maintain soil health, it's still part of our vegetable production system.
Great, thank you. Can you please state if there are any questions from my friends on the call?
Thank you.
No, thank you, sir.
No, thank you, sir.
And now?
Good afternoon. I just wanted to follow up on the memorandum of understanding that you
he had referred to in your brief of evidence, and His Honour was asking about the whether there was any further documentation, and while I think you've been involved in that process and you say there's ongoing discussions, there is reference to a kawanata, and my understanding was that there is a further document in the form of a kawanata that is in the process of being worked through with the parties and may have been executed by some of the Waikato Tainui Hapu. If you were able to ascertain that, and subject to, I'm unaware whether there's any confidentiality in relation to that, but perhaps an update could be provided to the court in relation to the status of that document. I haven't been able to ascertain it in the time available, and I'm loath to get evidence from the bar, but it might be of assistance to fill that gap.
So, sorry, what was the question?
Catch me on. Just that you're aware that there is another document in the process of being prepared.
Thank you. So, are you informing me?
I'm asking you whether you're aware of it.
I haven't been to every one of the meetings since that evidence was written, so.
You're probably the last witness that probably has detailed knowledge of it, so perhaps if you can make inquiries and if you think there is a document, further document you're able to share, and subject to confidentiality, then it might be of assistance to the court.
I understand. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anything further, Ms. Ford?
Thank you again, Mr. Ball. I think that the uncertainty has arisen because Mr. McCann talked about a co-editor, which is a covenant document, which is the sign, and your document is a memorandum of understanding. So they're usually quite different documents, which is why I was asking the question. So, yeah, if you could, as Mr. Hurd's quite inadequately put, find out if there's other documents to find, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
But look, one of the questions I did have about the documents you have put into your evidence is it talks about a ICMP to be developed by June 2023. Has that been developed, or you don't know?
As I understand it, it's still a work in progress.
Right. And you anticipate when that might be completed?
I think it's due by December.
Okay.
So imminent, I believe.
Okay. And this document that you've got appears to be high level. I assume that's because it's right at the beginning stages of when you're starting to develop relationships with the parties. Is that correct?
That will probably be about 6 months into the timeline of that process.
Yeah.
So that's probably given a snapshot in time, if that's helpful.
Yeah. Okay. And in the engagements that you've had, and Mr. McCann said they've been extremely positive, I think you reiterated that today, you found there to be no real issue because the thought process has been relatively collaborative in dealing with issues around fresh water?
Correct. Particularly engagement between the grower representatives, a representative from Horticulture New Zealand and Manukenua in particular, has been good, very good. I think engagement by Auckland Council has been really positive too. I think that Waikato Regional Council hasn't been quite so engaged in the process as Auckland Council. That's an observation.
I was going to ask that, so yeah, that's helpful. Right, thank you for your
sure.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ball. In front of you probably see that. Picture tells 1,000 words. I'm just interested in the cover. Apparently, the cover of the picture is courtesy of the Ball Brothers, so I'm guessing that might be you.
Correct.
What am I looking at?
So there you are looking at property on Pukekohe Hill, so in the Auckland catchment. In the background you have a cover crop of some mustard. It's the yellow colour there. In the foreground you have a sediment control pond, and right at the front you can see two pipes leading into what looks like a plastic drum with three waratah fins. So that is a decant device. So you can't see it with the resolution of the photo, but that blue drum has, it's got like probably 500 holes on it of a certain size to allow the water to decant out of that. So that's effectively a big strainer that retains the salt particles from the bake load that Mr. Barber was talking about, so it allows the water to drain out over time. So in other words, that's providing the tension over time to allow the sediment to settle out. And you can probably see a bit further back. So the inlet for that sediment control pond is at the other end of where the drums are, and then that allows the sediment to settle out before it exits out through that decanting device.
Yeah, I can see a little fan of sediment coming in at the top end of the pond. So how that would fill up in a typical rainfall event?
It would fill up with water in a bigger event. I'd be talking rain intensity of probably between 25 and 50 millimetres, and that would possibly take up to 24 hours to drain out, again depending on intensity and subsequent rain events, but also depending on what's in the ground. So with the cover crop, the infiltration of the rainfall will actually be probably quite high, and it would probably, so it may not even fill up, depending on the time of year, depending on how much rainfall's been in the previous month, depending on a lot of factors.
And so this was probably taken more than 10 years ago.
2017, I believe. Oh, Mr. Barber's not here. 2017, correct?
The document on the cover says June 2014.
Okay, so this might not be the one that I'm thinking of, then I'm just, yeah, okay. This could be, that could be an earlier photograph.
Oh, I'm just wondering, if that is 10 plus years old, has the technology advanced? Would you do it differently today?
So post 1999, that was the year Mr. Barber was looking at. That was when I think the end of January, there was a major rain event in Tukatoa. Somebody lost their life. The frequency of sustainability grew out of that after that event. Our business started doing work on this type of activity around the year 2000 specifically. We have done a lot of development work, and that illustration there, that's why I'm probably a little bit uncertain of the year, but we've been doing that work for probably at least 20 years.
So that's about the state of the art now?
Yeah. We've changed a little bit even since then. So even post the events of this year, the anniversary weekend floods, we have looked at fine-tuning and improving things a little bit more than that show and sort of what we learn and what things we do.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I've got 1,000 words.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ball. Did you have any involvement in development of the risk scorecard?
Not specifically, but I've been informed about it as it's been going, but yeah, not personally.
Okay. Do you have farm environment plans in your organisation?
Yes, we do.
And do you have one for each farm, or are they done in groups?
Mm. So, good question. So, in 2016, when Waikato notified the plan change, we actually did a draft of what a farm environment plan might look like, along with working with a consultant. So our own business did that on one property in the Pukekaua area. And that, we chose that property because it had a wider mix of slope paddock size, angle, rock earing areas, grass areas, and other things. So that ended up being about a 150-page document for one farm. So quite complete. So when the regional council told us, well, it would cost you $3,000 or $4,000 to do a farm plan, we said, well, actually, don't believe that's going to be true, because so we thought we'd test it, and that's what we thought we'd have to come up with. So that draft still sits there, and that may well be some of the basis of a lot of the work of what's been done at the moment through the farm plans that we're talking about, the freshwater farm plans.
Okay, so have you got individual plans for other farms, or is it just that one for the moment?
To that level of complexity, that group of farms on that around that property, but we have farm plans and we have a lot of information.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask if it's possible to have a copy, but not of the 150 pages. Is there a sort of standard farm plan for CVP around the place?
Can you be more specific?
Is there an example of a farm plan that would be typical for CVP in the Waikato area that could be made available to us just to have a look at?
I believe that it could be possible, yeah.
Thank you. That would be good if that could be done. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. I just one thing, Mr. Ball, just back to this picture.
Mm-hmm.
So those two polythene pipes that come out of the superstructure, what's the outfall to those?
Okay, so they go, so the idea of that is that drains the bottom of the pond, so yes, we're not relying on just drainage out of the structure itself. So they go to depends on where they are, but they might go to what we call a land drain.
Yes.
If it's a land drain, then normally that would be stabilised with either rock or it might be vegetated. It will be generally impacted in nature. Depending on where that sediment control pond might be on the property, that might go into a roadside slough drain, like a council slough drain. So it will vary, and across our business, we would literally have hundreds of these.
Yes.
Not tens or fives or tens, we would literally have hundreds of them. We have a whole team of people and machines that are employed for more than 6 months of the year, specifically on maintaining maintaining, emptying, and doing, just making sure that soil stays on the land. That, as Mr. Megan was talking about, that is our natural capital, and we don't want to lose it.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. You were saying that the vast bulk of the particulate should be kept out using this structure. As the water goes on downstream, is there any further filtering or detention that would enable you to pick up the remaining 5% or whatever?
Again, that would depend on the complexity of the farm and the catchment, the receiving body. Sometimes we'll discharge down through what has become a riparian area for us. So it could be all planted out, or it could be planted up with matter grasses and things. So it will very much depend on the situation and the geographic location.
But then from this area, you will every so often dig that out and respread it, presumably.
Yeah, so at least once a year that soil is, and what we generally try and do is the excavator will go around first, it will take the soil, put it on the edge of the bundle area so that it's retained, that will allow it to drain.
Yeah.
What we find is if we move it when it's wet, with our heavy volcanic soil, we actually compact it, we actually destroy the structure, so we tend not to do that, so we let it drain for a month or two, and then generally early in the summer, like say January, February, as the crops are coming out, because when crops are in, we generally can't do that work, but we can get a digger along the headlands, we can drain the topsoil, we can let it drain while the crops will grow, and once the crop's out, before we do the primary groundwork, we'll use normally a scoop, so a tractor mounted scoop, the digger will load that, and then we spread it back at the top of the soil, top of the paddock or the farm, as the case may be. We have cognizant of handling the score when it's dry, because it is very fragile.
Maintain structure and dryability.
Yeah, particular farms can grow vegetables for commercially for well over 100 years.
Thank you very much for your evidence and support. Thank you.
I assume you'll help Mr. Ball make that additional documentation.
Yes. And just on that, sorry, sir, in response to your question, Commissioner Hodges, about the standard FEP, Mr. Barber's exhibit 2 from this morning. Attachment 2 from this morning was the NZ GAP standard for farm farm claims for CDP.
Okay,
so that's where you can get that.
Thank you.
I now call Mr. Brent Wilcox. Can you please confirm your full name for the court?
Reed Michael Wilcox.
And you prepared a brief of evidence dated 28th July 2023?
Correct.
And you confirm that evidence is true and correct to the best of your knowledge and ability? I just want to take you to your map on the last page of your evidence. I was hoping you could just explain what we see there, please.
Yeah, well, that's really only a part of our growing operations within 2C1 within the human view. I'll sort of point out that in terms of our growing operation in the region, in the wider fragment of the Kelly region, well, about half of that area would be growing within PC1 for boundaries, the other half would be in the Auckland region. So currently we would operate our enterprise across the whole wider land mass and operate as one unit. So we currently integrate our integrated rotational plan across that whole land base. So in my in terms of a change for PC1, that will enforce a change in the way we actually go about our rotational planning and will be somewhat restrictive in itself. Because we haven't got flexibility right across the whole land base, but that will almost be halved and we'll have to operate within certain bounds within that each inside the boundary, if you like. That makes sense. So that is to the constraint that we will need to reorganise our farm enterprise on already. The map itself is indicating different properties within the MFU. And they also set aside the sub-catchments. So you can see that the properties straddle the boundaries across the sub-catchments. So you can see we get very intricate around the management across those properties, in terms of the property mix and how the county will need to be managed to be able to manage that rotational flexibility. So to me, that would be very restrictive. And we'll have some restrictions on the way in which we can actually manage that rotation over time. I referenced some of the discussion earlier about subleasing and the pathway for subleasing to manage the process. I will point out, though, that the subleasing or swapping, as we call it in the trade, is somewhat restrictive to compatible crops. Right. So when you look at the extensive crops that are grown, i.e. potatoes and onions, by far the biggest crops across the region, most growers produce those crops. So the ability to swap or sublease, or that purpose fertiliser grower, do not want a potato grower compromising my rotation for potatoes on their land, and vice versa. So the subleasing component is really restricted to complementary crops. And that is a big restriction in itself. So we just wanted to point that out, that those constraints that we've read all in terms of the rotational mix that we're trying to get our heads around within the confines of the PC one framework as it's currently grown.
You talk about operating across both Auckland and Waikato regions. If we think about just the PC one catchment, how many hectares do you operate within PC one?
Within PC one, as my evidence, around 350 hectares.
And how many subcatchments is that across?
It's across 700 subcatchments.
And how stable has that been over time? How much change have you had in your holding over time?
I think it's been relatively stable, although the mix has changed somewhat.
Thank you. If you could just remain for questions from my colleagues in the court.
Good afternoon, Mr. Wilcox.
Hello.
Things I was going to ask you about had been touched upon to some degree in the questions from the council and from the court, but I will just go there for a bit of clarification. So in paragraph 15, as your council asked you, you have 650 hectares across Pukekohe in the North Waikato region, of which 350 is contained in the PC1 catchment area. Then you say this is made up of approximately 50% long-term family farms. And just to be clear about that long-term family farms, does that mean owned? They're owned by you or your associated entities? Yeah, okay. And then the remaining 50% leased from third-party landlords, typically on a long-term basis. And I wanted to ask this of you, but that does suggest that your productive area is fairly stable from year to year, that long-term aspect of most of the leases. Is that what you were saying?
It is, although tenure is becoming more tenuous, so in the current environment of approaching the building boundaries, lifestyle properties, etc., the tenure of some of those properties is quite turning over faster in recent times than it has done in the past.
Right, so as the leases expire, the properties at risk of being lost from your operation.
There's a lease period, but also the ownership of the land can be changed more frequently. And with new stakeholders, new owners, the objectives or the desires of the new landowner may be different from the past landowner, etc. Things that's probably happening more often than they used to.
Okay, that's clear. Thank you. Now, at paragraph 24 in your evidence, you say, in your opinion, the subcatchment rotation scale is unlikely to be workable for most CVP growers operating in the lower Waikato FMU. And you've got the picture there, so the figure there, the diagram, which you've talked about a bit. And I see there there's three blocks, and I think in your explanation earlier you said there's more to it than that. That's not your full operation. That's just part of it for illustrative purposes. So in terms of how rotation occurs, are you able to explain that a bit, perhaps by reference to that diagram, what actually happens on the ground?
Yeah, it would be good to have a full attachment view in terms of trying to explain that, but I suppose in principle I would say that the wider land mass that you've got to rotate against, the more flexibility you have to be able to manage that rotation. straightened into a smaller parcel and the more restrictions come into play. So these three properties here are part of our central cookie carver farming operation. They're all long-term family-owned properties. There are some sort of sublease property on the outskirts of those properties. But some of that land is suitable for certain uses as opposed to other crops. So that, for our crops in this region, it's really our seasonal nature of the cropping cycle is really geared towards spring production. So it's relatively early and frost-free land that we can rotate, particularly potatoes that are very frosty. So to the extent that the paddocks are restricted by month as to what period you can plant those through into the period for spring harvest. So the rotational planning gets quite complex, right down to almost weekly scheduling. And you need flexibility, I think it's sort of mentioned earlier in the day, that when you have weather and problems around continuing your programs, because they're all sequentially managed in terms of harvest intervals and when those crops are required to maintain continuity of product and customer base. Any disruption there, you have to mitigate the next to try and counteract in your farming operation. So we might need to make short-term adjustments on the run because we're restricted for various reasons, particularly around weather uncertainties.
Right, and basically, what you might be wanting to do when you rotate in accordance with your rotational plan is, say, the northern block, you might grow potatoes on it 1 year, and then the next year you'll be growing potatoes on the eastern block there in that diagram, and that's what you mean by rotation.
It's more granular than that because it could be broken across the property.
Yeah.
So you'll have potentially have a mix of crops on.
Yeah, I see. So it's about rotating the parcels for a variety of crops. Yeah. But the principle is that you're moving, you're shifting them around. But is it your understanding that PC1 would prevent that from continuing?
As I mentioned, it might be very restrictive in terms of the flexibility you've got to be able to operate.
Right, and is that, have you had advice on that? Is that your own reading of the rules?
Well, I think that's privileged, isn't it? Question about what the legal advice is.
Well, I wasn't. Have you had planning advice on that, or is it your own reading?
I mean, I think that this witness, like others, is concerned about what the provisions may be. Plan appeal. I don't think we need to get into an issue about what advice of any kind he's received. He's expressed that concern. I think we'll get to the substance of whether or not the provisions clearly provide for the way in which things to be done or what they may mean in law. And it may well be that this court's decision could help to explain things if that's the way we're dealing with it. But I don't think we need a forensic exercise as to how he's come to the view.
No, I wasn't intending to get into that, and it is absolutely something I will pick up in submission and carry on with
him. Thank you.
Thank you for your assistance with that, Mr. Wilcox. This is just a final point. Paragraph 19. You say there, second sentence, a grower needs to be assured that their parcel of land used by another operation will be cared, maintained and treated to the same standard of their own operation. And that's a comment that came through in the evidence of some other witnesses as well. And I just want to confirm with you that would include an expectation that any conditions of any consent that might apply to that land are complied with as well? Okay, thank you. No further questions.
No, no questions.
Found that an area of land was no longer available for lease and you needed to get an equivalent area, would that be what you'd need to do? Would you try and replace an area that was no longer available to you for lease?
As you said, with the intention, it could be quite difficult to
achieve. So I'm just trying to look at the practicalities you're concerned about. If you were able to find a replacement, would that be in the same general area, or it could be anywhere in the FMU where you could get suitable land? Would that be right?
I would say it would be far easier within the FMU. If you were to put it within the sub-catchment, that would be a far harder ask.
I was thinking, getting the planning provisions for a moment, from your practical point of view as a farmer trying to run a commercial operation, where would you want to be able to search for your land to replace an area no longer available?
It would depend on the property. You've got some different values and brings to the mix. It may be that it needs to be quite close to Oxford.
And typically, how far apart would your operations be? Are they sort of 10 kilometres, 20, 50?
Or we'd be operating off a base in that region of at least 7 kilometres radius.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you. Anything arising? Thank you very much for your evidence, Mr. Wilcox. You're excused.
Mr. Ward, I think that's the evidence for the Curry Vegetable Growers Association.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right. Mr. Ferguson, you'll be ready to start in the morning?
I am, sir. I was contemplating requiring you to start the CNI submissions.
Right, well.
That'll take a little longer than 15 minutes.
Yes, well, we already have those, and I think to a greater or lesser extent we've had a quick look at them, but I think we might benefit from thinking about them at least tonight and then coming back tomorrow. So in terms of tomorrow, would you start with CNI's case?
I think I would start with CNI's case.
And then go to the River Eby.
Yes, because I think it's a little bit more confined.
Right. Do you have separate legal submissions for the River Ewe, or are your submissions
yes.
to CNI broadly encapsulated?
No.
So we're going to be surprised with those tomorrow?
Surprised might not be the verb I'd use. But yes, we'll get back in mind. And also, I think the jury felt that they usefully segue into some of the issues.
We don't have anything in advance from him either, so we won't be surprised if that's not the right word, but it will be something else.
I think it's not flippancy required.
I'm sorry.
No, that was from me. I was
right.
Restraining myself, sir. I obviously find myself a little bit with CNI in the inverse situation to which Mr. Ruff found himself in the Point Source Discharge. He was correct counsel and I'm correct witness. I've had a discussion pleasingly with Ms. Robson. She wasn't really in the headspace to comprehend the explanation, so I'm going to talk to executive of CMIU Holdings Limited regarding the approach.
chat on something further tomorrow.
Well, on a very prosaic note, are we likely to conclude the hearing of submissions and evidence tomorrow, or do you think things will go into private?
It does depend on whether the on the cross examination.
I understand that. I'm about
to. But submission wise, I would think the CMI comes over, it would take no more than half an hour, subject to questions.
Yeah.
The review ones may take a little longer because there are some aspects of the family reflecting on what else other matters have been advanced that I think arise for consideration with the court and maybe of some value, if not for the immediate purposes of PC1, for the purposes of some legal guidance going forward, which we obviously grappled, as your honour is aware, with certainly fine manner in the context of resource management, consenting. But this is the first real grappling in the context of planning framework. And that's with all due respect to his honour, such advising in the ASHA's decision, which was very much on the fly, and that's not a major respect to him, but the way in which it had to be grappled with partway through the world of balance and change. And I think there are some interesting legal issues that the court may or may not wish to grapple with, but I don't wish to perpetuate litigation beyond the environment court by announcements on matters that are purely esoteric. But I think there are some interesting issues, and just by way of example, in case you want to reflect on it, we are in a slightly different position from Tilly Feynman. It's been a statutory direction within the river legislation for Tilly Feynman to give an effect to, notwithstanding that some of my friends have referred to an exception that places that obligation on the regional council. That section only applies when Tilly Feynman has been reviewed and they have to carry out a review of their documents within 6 months and determine whether any changes are necessary in order to get effective to the requirement. And if they are then doing a plan change to do that, they are acting directly on the basis of a directive in the River Settlement Act. Here, it's simply replacing them to the requirement in the regional policy statement that gives rise to the consequential obligation under the RMA to get effective to the requirement. Now, whether that's a difference in the context of various matters, including King Salmon and hierarchies, etc., I just felt I was obliged to note, not that I'm inviting you to say there's a difference or not, but I think it's an interesting issue that has to be grappled with.
Well, it's an interesting issue as you raise it in that general sense. I'm not sure that it's apparent to us that it's an issue as between parties.
No, or necessarily material.
Well, that would be, that's an element of materiality, is that if parties are not bringing a dispute before us on that, and everyone, both counsel and witnesses, have almost universally pledged that they are seeking to give effect to Tūruhi Whānau. I don't know that we do want to venture into.
No, I just noted now, and it's very useful. It was useful for me to do so in order to perhaps refocus on what I should do in the morning in that regard. It certainly was an issue before the panel that had been raised, particularly the intersection between the Tūruhi Whānau and its weighting and part two of the RMA.
Yeah.
I didn't read that as being raised so directly. But they've all been the submissions presented.
No. And in terms of part two, Te Ture Whaumana plainly is a particular policy statement. And I don't, again, no one has suggested that there is anything in it that requires recourse to part two to check whether or not it promotes sustainable management. So I don't, other than the challenged if the two of you done at all. All right.
That's right.
And I appreciate your point about cross-examination. As I say, this is prosaic and is really just around practicalities from the court's point of view. I might just, on a sort of a nil return basis, poll counsel. Is there anybody anticipating that they will want to cross-examine witnesses for the River Iwi or for CNI or for Iwi Hauraki to any great extent?
Yes, to the first part, but not to any great extent, so we'll be pretty focused.
Mm. All right.
And are the director general will be of the same?
I have no desire to cut off anyone's desire to exercise their rights to cross-examine witnesses, but I do just want to have some idea whether or not we might be closing this part of the hearing tomorrow afternoon or whether we're going in Friday morning.
Peter Lane, Fed Farmers, have questions for Mr. Brush and Mr. Lowe only, and they will not be extensive.
And you've had a chance to look at the updating statements that have been circulated?
Yes, they arise directly out of the updating statements, so we'll confine them to that, I expect.
Well, then I'm anticipating that will mean that we will finish probably sometime tomorrow afternoon. Any advance on that? Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for that. That assists us in our plan. Are there any other housekeeping or other matters that we can usefully address this afternoon?
I've been reminded that site visit
is
the matter we talked about earlier today.
Yes.
We've looked back at the memorandum that was filed by Mr. Matheson and Ms. Edwards. That is our current list of the locations that the parties have put forward to visit. As of today, we're making inquiries through the Regional Council of the practicality of visiting all of those locations in one day by helicopter to understand if that is a realistic prospect.
Yes. Thank you.
And if it wasn't, then I guess at that point we might be at a stage to say, well, are there some
prioritisation
that can be carried out? So that's where we're at. We'll report back as soon as we can.